Irish, welcome to Australia.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be back. Amazing.
Tell us about your incredible performances.
Well, it's just been one stellar show after the next. We've been, currently I'm on the tour with the Festival of Small Halls, and we've been going to rural Victoria, and that included a stellar Port Ferry folk festival appearance. And the crowds have just been, they're just typical Aussie crowds. They're so incredibly engaged. They're just, like, I love just after I finish, just jumping into the crowd and having a chat. Like, they're just so incredible. They're so engaged. I love playing here.
Tell us about the politics that influenced you as a young person growing up in Ireland that have kind of contributed to the awesome energy of your shows.
Yeah, I think in Ireland we have such a long and storied history, and I was able to grow up surrounded by, you know, many generations of great storytellers, and you know, and knowing our history, and you know, we have a great sense of, because we were occupied for so long, you know, a great sense of our history. And a lot of that comes from the song and the stories. And so if you go into that kind of, you know, the work, or, you know, quote, I always say quote unquote work because it never feels like work to me, of performance and songwriting, you can't help. That's going through your bones. That's going through your bones. So we've always had a good sense of justice and what's right and wrong. And I just love to write about it. And unfortunately, in today's world right now, we have a lot to write about.
Absolutely. How is that affecting your songwriting?
I had a great conversation the other night after one of the shows with some of the patrons, and they asked the same question. And I had to say, you know what, being honest, I can't keep up. As soon as I think I'm writing about something, something else happens, and I'm like, oh, I have to go back to that and write about this. And so I think the next album is going to have to be a trilogy.
Fantastic, fantastic. Tell us about your queer journey.
Yeah, so I was extremely lucky in the family that I have, that they just allowed me to be. I was also lucky growing up in school. I was much more sport orientated, so I could almost hide. You know, it was the great term we don't hear anymore, tomboy. And so I could hide, you know, my queerness well, up until, you know, 14 or 15, where I thought, nah, this is who I am. And so, you know, being able to come out to my family was just utterly amazing. Of course, you're terrified, but then my family were just like, yeah, kid, we knew, you're all right, you know. And so I feel so, so grateful, because so many people don't have that luxury and that privilege. And so instead of just going with it, I started to be more vocal about the ones that aren't so lucky, and also trying to, I don't know if change people's opinion is the right idea in the beginning when I started out. I think I was just trying to show people there is literally no difference between you and I. I just happen to love who I love. And so, you know, and through my music, I never hid my sexuality in my music. When I was writing about love, it was quite obvious in my intros who I was writing about. And I felt very strongly about that, that I wouldn't hide any, you know, ambiguous gendering in my songs. You knew who I was writing about. So I just feel, you know, I'm very protective over my private life. But also, it's such a big part of me that I don't hide away from it at all. And you'll hear it in the songs.
So you came out when you were quite young, and yeah, they enabled you to kind of, you know, platform and springboard as a songwriter to stand up for queer folks who are marginalized.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, we didn't have the language when I first came out, but then being able to clasp onto that language and identify myself as non-binary, and then, you know, to just have that relief of, okay, this fits, this suit fits, this glove fits me, And again, I go back to my privilege. So many people just didn't have that, you know. And you know, the word woke is banded around as this negative thing. They've weaponized the word, and you know, woke is just being awake to things that are wrong, right? And so I felt very strongly about, especially queer youth, about getting in front of them and explaining that, you know, you're not alone. It feels like that, but you're not. You're not alone. And, you know, and telling them and expressing to them the shoulders that I stood on, the many, many people who paved the way for me, I would hopefully try and pave the way for them, you know, and just people should be safe. All people should be safe.
How do Irish folks in Ireland process your work and view you as an artist? Do you have much of a platform in Ireland?
I don't actually. It wouldn't be, how would I say this? It wouldn't be my biggest European following at all. When I am there, it's incredible. The shows sell out, and it's fantastic. But I was away from Ireland and indeed Europe for so long because I lived, 20 years in Canada, and so my audiences grew quite vastly in Canada and here in Australia, and it's only recently in the last sort of, I would say maybe 5 years, that I've really started to come back and look at Europe and go, okay, I'm almost like I'm ready to come home kind of thing. My parents are still very healthy and very well, but they're, you know, they're 80 and 81. And so I was very keen from a personal point of view to try and not be so far away. And again, the privilege I have about being a career musician is that I can be closer to them now, you know. But Ireland is a very wonderful, wonderful place. The level of artistry in Ireland is off the charts. And so it just really does feel like you're grounded when you come home to Ireland. The stories, the songs, the bands that are coming out now and the solo artists are just, they're taking over the world. Our acting is taking over the world. It's just, yeah, it's a privilege. It's an absolute privilege.
And I imagine growing up in Ireland gave you a great sense of poetry that's clearly influenced your songwriting.
Very much so, very much so. We're very lucky in Ireland. We're introduced to, you know, the great poets very early on in our schooling. And also you get it at home as well, you know. But to be able to read the greats, and remember the greats were doing it not in their own language as well. And so, you know, we have many poet laureates who we have to remember did it in English when our language is Irish.
Absolutely. And over the last few decades, there's been a great reclaiming of the language in Ireland as well.
Absolutely. And so proud of it too. There is that influx again, this great wave of it's okay to be proud of your culture, your language. There's more and more young people speaking it. We see it more on the television. We see it more in movies. We see it now quite evidently through the music. Now, there's so many bands, like Kneecap is one of them, that are just getting that sense of pride back into this is our language. And yes, we still predominantly speak English, but don't forget, Irish is just as strong. So, it's a great kick, and it's brilliant to be. It's one of those cliches. It's a great time to be alive.
Tell us about your immigration journey from Ireland to Canada.
Yeah, so it goes back a little bit. So my parents, they worked abroad a lot. My dad was in the airline business. And so when I was six, we moved to Trinidad. I have an older brother and sister, and we as a family, we moved to Trinidad for like 2 years, and then came back to Ireland. And then at 14, my dad moved to the Middle East, and 15, myself and my mum joined him. My brother and sister were a little bit older, so they stayed home. So I always had a great sense of wonder, and that came from my parents. There was none of this gated community stuff or schools that you know were again gated away, or if you lived in the country, you lived where locals lived, you went to school where locals lived, and it just gave me a great sense of people are people and the wonderment of learning other people's cultures, language, history, even the true stuff, because it's always written by the colonialist. So having firsthand look at their own history from their own words just was incredible. And so it was about, I think I was 18 or 19, and I had the opportunity to go to Sweden, and I went off to Sweden to play the Gothenburg Irish Festival. And I was supposed to be there for 5 days, and I ended up staying nearly 4 years. And from there, I was touring. I saw that I could tour in you know, all over Sweden, Denmark, Norway, Finland, Germany, you know, the Netherlands. And then I actually went to Australia. I ended up in WA for a few years. And then it was around 2004, 2005 that I started to realize if I really wanted to make a career out of this and really wanted to feel like I was making a difference with my work, I wanted to go somewhere where it was really, really, really hard. And at the time, Canada was seen as the hardest place to break into as a non-Canadian in this field, because the talent was so high there. And I thought, right, that's where I'm going. And so I had a great tour booked around Eastern Canada. It went so well that the following year I moved over there and was able to start the immigration process. Again, it was easier for me than most because I wear my privilege on my skin. But I just absolutely adored Canada and still do. The ability to tour year-round, it's such a vast, vast country. And they love their music there. Again, they have a long storied history, the Indigenous people. And, you know, it's just every day you learn something new, and that pushes you as an artist. You never learn. There's no end. Do you know what I mean? Same with the guitar. I play the guitar and there's no end to, oh, okay, I've learned that now. It's you're continually learning. And that, I think, translates then to the personal as well. You never stop learning, you never stop listening, you'll all the time miss something if you feel you're stuck in one kind of, oh, this is a fact and I'm not moving from this, where it's always moving, people are always moving, times are always moving, political unrest, political stability, it's a movement. And so, yeah, I just felt a real sense, because we were moving when we were young, that the world was my home. You know, I know it sounds a bit silly, but, I really felt that there was a big world and my place was in it. And I just feel that the similarities, that's the one thing for me, the similarities you see in every country, the beautiful, loving families, the hospitality, the culture, the language, the songs, they all end up kind of being in the same vein no matter where you are, and you just have to open your eyes and your heart and let it in.
Are you songwriting right now in Australia, and if so, what's inspiring it?
I am songwriting. I think I've said it at many of these small halls tours that I truly feel that, you know, I've visited many countries, and normally it's the cities I visit. And whilst they're all fantastic, I will always stand by that the life and soul of every country is its rural areas. They're not just the breadbasket, they're the life and soul. And so there's been so many times after the shows, we've just talked to people and they've just told us their stories, and it inspires a great deal to me. And so I've started writing some story songs. And then obviously, as I mentioned before, we're living in a time where it's quite, you know, unnerving at the moment, what's going on in the world, and everyone's feeling it. A lot of them are feeling it economically, but also the fear factor that's coming in, because we don't know what's happening in the world. We don't see an end to it, to this ridiculous conflict. And so I've been writing about that as well. But I think I've been writing about it in a much more human level rather than just ranting about governments are wrong and war is wrong. And more, I've been kind of coming at it from a more human level, as in, you know, just someone who's in those countries and looking up and seeing destruction, you know, and then also our responsibility as we look at our governments, maybe not right, making the correct decisions. And so, yeah, it's actually been quite prolific. And I don't usually write this much on tour, but I found Australia is just allowing me to do that now in the month I've been here so far.
Of course, the times are a time of pending war. You're based in eastern Canada. You're so close to Greenland. You're mm-hmm. so close to the United States. Mm-hmm. Your geography there must be really affecting how you see the current geopolitical climate. What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I think another added one is I got married last August, and I married a Dane. And so the Greenland thing was very, and I was in Denmark at the time when all of that rhetoric and nonsense came out of that person's mouth about Greenland. And it was so disrespectful. It was just so disrespectful. But also there was that worry within Denmark, like, are we in trouble here? Could this be an engagement from a so-called friend in the world? And then with Canada being so close, and it's the largest land border in the world, when again this idiotic rhetoric that was coming out of the United States at the time, and still in Canada, we're a small population. We're a very large country. It's very like Australia, to be honest. It's a massive country, small population, all kind of concentrated around the same areas. And so in Canada, we have a term called elbows up, which is a hockey term, which is just like, no, elbows up and go in hard. And so that's what we did in Canada. And we showed a great collective, and we just said, no, okay, we're no longer going to visit the States. We're no longer buying American goods. And it hurt them. It hurt them. And it also allowed people in the States to realize that, you know, Canada was not just the bumbling, you know, snow neighbor. You know, we keep the light. Ontario keeps the lights on for many of the eastern states in the United States. And they didn't know that. So these little things come out and you're like, okay, really, you're making an enemy of absolute friends in solidarity, and you're making an enemy of them. And you know, it's the same as in life. If you ostracize yourself, it's a very long and lonely road home. So I just think it's about level-headedness. It's about talking, you know, in reality and facts rather than hypotheticals and out-and-out lies. And I think in Canada, we've done that very well. I think Carney, our prime minister, really burst onto the stage in Davos. His level-headedness going around the world and representing Canada and new trade partners. And you know, it's politics is done well when it's done with integrity and heart. And I think we've shown that in Canada at the moment.
Finally, Irish, tell us about some of your upcoming gigs in Australia.
Yes. So I have got, so I'm finishing this one on, that is on the 22nd of March. We finished the Small Halls tour and it's been fantastic. And then I have a couple of days off and then I'm really excited. March 26th, that's a Thursday, I'm at the Corner Hotel in Richmond, and that's with Emily Ullman. March 27th on Friday, I'm at the Burringer Cultural Centre, and that's again with Emily. And then March 29th, we're doing a day show, and that's at Archie's Creek Hotel, again with Emily. And then a couple of days off, and I'm flying up to Canberra, and I'm going to appear at the National Folk Festival. So it's just, I'm just this tour has been an absolute wonderment for me. I'm just so excited that it's continued a little bit longer.
Fantastic. Irish Mai, then, it has been an absolute pleasure to chat with you today on 3CR. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it so much, and we'll see you all at the shows. 3CR.